And we were all the girls in the dormitory after hours, and we were all around this little radio. And we were terribly concerned because we had heard on the radio that possibly after they had finished with Pearl Harbor, they would come in. And we were, of course, being in Vermilion, South Dakota, we were kind of in direct line of the way they would come. And so we stayed up all night to listen to the news. We were so worried and concerned that they might come. And maybe because we were all 19 and 20-year-old girls, we were emotional, you know, and thinking, oh, this could happen, you know. And so that was my story about the Pearl Harbor night. And then I got married in 1943. And I wanted a certain pair of shoes to go with my wedding outfit. And my ration had already been used. So my father gave me his shoe ration for the year. And then in return, I said, well, all right, I'll give you my sugar ration. And then my mother would put up canned things, you know, and she needed sugar. And so it all turned out very well. But we had sugar, coffee, shoes, and I believe that was about all I can remember that we had rationed. And most of us that had, we would exchange them with other members in the family or other people, and especially the sugar ration, because just as a family, that there were five of us, we didn't use a lot of sugar except when mother was canning, you know, and she needed that sugar to make jellies and jams and peaches, put up peaches and so forth. So that was it. When you'd go to I remember once we were traveling and we stopped someplace to get coffee, and they put sugar in the coffee. Well, I never drank coffee with sugar in it because I drank it during rationing time. That was when I started to drink coffee. And so I can remember that it was interesting how they handled that. But you know, we didn't really feel that we were denied anything because we were willing to do this, and everybody else was. We would exchange our ration cards with other members of the family, like my father giving me his shoe ration and different things like that, you know, that were made it so you didn't really notice it too much. But we were very, of course, very concerned about the war and everything like that.
Do you remember, how would you get your news, or do you remember hearing news during the war too, and how would you get it?
We got it off on the radio, and we ran our radios day and night at the university in our dorm rooms. Somebody's radio was running day and night because there were some girls whose boyfriends were already gone. I was fortunate that my husband-to-be was a medical student, and he took the Air Force exams while he was at Vermilion, probably about 1942. And he passed and everything, but when he went to get it, why, they said, oh no, we're not going to give you that because you are more important to us as a doctor than as a Air Force airman. And so that was why, through all the years that he spent, 22 years of his life in the military, he always kept saying, oh, I can't get out, because they kept me off of the battlefields of Europe while he was studying medicine. He graduated in 44 and interned, and that was another thing we had. He went to the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. That he was in the first a 4-year medical class out there, and Vermilion only had a 2-year medical course at the time. And so he always said, they kept me off the battlefields of Europe. I can't not serve in the military. I'll serve. He says, I foresee no future except being in the military. So he was very loyal to the Army, and an Army surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, and served all. He went in 1946, because that was when he finished with his internship. And he served until 1965, when he died in the Dominican Republic of a massive heart attack, 47 years old.